asked Look, and then walked off, punishing the roadway with the heels of her boots. It was the most professional thing she'd done during the entire interaction. She started the SUV, did a tire-smoking re-entrance to BIA-4, and continued south with a full head of steam. Henry yawned, placed his license back in his wallet, and flipped it onto the dash.
I do not think that I ever have had brake lights.
The lower ridge that leads to Painted Warrior Cliff runs for about a mile north and west from Red Burnie, and the only way to the site is from along the ridge or back up through the dirt roads below. I doubted that Katie and Michael would want to be married on a cliff, but Henry assured me that the area at the base was as picturesque as it was dramatic. He was right. We'd followed Lonnie's instructions and eased Resdog off the road between the grass-covered hills that ringed the base of the cliffs and a large sedimentary rock cairn. We climbed steadily until we reached a saddle and a scattering of large boulders and parked at the top of a small ridge, just as wisps of steam were floating out from under Resdog's hood. There was a thick-bodied mule deer a little off to our right, heading down toward Ty Creek, and I allowed her a substantial lead before opening the door and letting Dog out to patrol the area. He immediately went to where the doe had been standing and watched impatiently as she bounded through the scrub pine and clambered over the rocks toward the base of the cliffs.
You never would have caught her anyhow.
He turned to look at me as I closed the door and joined Henry, who was leaning on the homemade day-glow orange grill guard and partial steam bath at the front of the truck.
What do you think?
It was just the way Lonnie had described it. I had heard of the site and might have even been here when I was a kid, but I guess I'd never really seen it. Framed by a box canyon below, the Painted Warrior raised his face from the ridge and looked toward the sky. As with cloud images, you had to look at the thing for a while before you saw it, but he was there. The features reminded me of another friend, Virgil White Buffalo. All the way down to the deep furrows that indented the rock visage's face. The majority was a khaki-colored stone, but there were a few massive streaks of war paint. The rocks stained by the deposits of scoria that ran vertically down the giant's face, hence the name Painted Warrior. It was a straight-up climb of about 200 feet to the base of the ridge where the sheer cliff began. The bear tripped the latch, lifted Resdog's hood, and watched as a ghostly cloud of steam trailed away in the breeze. I wondered if it too would turn into something recognizable. Henry was gently working the radiator cap off with a red shop rag he'd retrieved from the cab.
When I was young, we used to hunt deer here, just run them up through the canyon and have somebody waiting at the ridge.
I looked around at the surrounding saddle, studded with Krumholtz pines, stunted by the altitude and atmospheric conditions. If you didn't know any better, you wouldn't think that the diminutive trees were actually hundreds of years old. Reflecting the sun that peeked through the assembled thunderheads were small outcroppings of rocks that surrounded the ridge like a reef.
Is this the spot Lonnie was thinking of?
Here, or possibly just past the creek.
He finally loosened the cap enough for a gurgling release and antifreeze dribbled down the radiator. I glanced back at the panoramic display.
Where the opening in the rock walls leads toward the cliff?
He rested the cap on the inner fender and turned to look along with me.
Yes.
He glanced back at the steam continuing to roil from Resdog.
Would you like to hike over there and see it?
I guess I'd better. I just wish I'd brought a camera so that I could send Katie pictures.
I have one in the truck.
He wiped his hands on the rag, which he returned to the cab, and came back with a medium-sized bag with a strap that he threw over his shoulder.
I also have 2 bottles of water. I am prepared.
Ty Creek was at the base of the ridge, but it was summer and the water was only ankle-deep. We forded the stream by walking on the rounded stones Dog just splashed through, and continued among the trees to the next hill. There was a clearer view of the lower cliffs, reflecting the bright sunlight that cascaded down in beams like some biblical illustration. the cliffs surrounding the bottom of the more impressive rocks above, and I had to admit that the whole area was pretty breathtaking. I stopped at the top of the hill to catch my breath and stared up at something that had reflected near the top of Painted Warrior. I stood there and took in a few lungfuls, wondering what it was I thought I'd seen. I'd had quite the adventure in the Cloud Peak wilderness area only 2 months earlier, and the effects were still lingering. The Cheyenne Nation was watching me. Thought I saw something up there. He turned and looked.
Where?
Near the top, something flashed. His keen eyes played across the uppermost ridge.
I do not see anything.
I nodded, probably just a reflection of some quartz or an old beer can.
Speaking of, can we get a beer after this?
His eyes scanned the ridge.
Sure.
He checked his wristwatch. We can go up to the Jimtown bar and get a drink before the professionals show up. We might not even get into a fight. In the meantime, can I have one of those bottles of water? He slung the bag from his shoulder, unzipped one of the compartments, and handed me a bottle, the condensation slick on the outside. I sipped my water, slipped my hat off of my head, and wiped the sweat from inside the band. Is that professional courtesy when you visit somebody else's bar? He nodded, and then squatted down and began pulling a large camera body and lens from the bag.
You bet.
Having assembled the camera, he popped off the cap and pointed the lens toward me. I held my head up to block the shot. Just the surroundings, please, not the inhabitants. Dog sat beside me and looked at Henry. Take a picture of him. He doesn't seem to mind.
Your daughter would like a photo of you, I'm sure, and since we are in the position of negotiating our way out of disaster...
I put my hat back on my head. All right, but then you have to let me take one of you for her. He raised the camera and directed it toward me.
I am like Dog. I do not mind. I am photogenic.
When I laughed, he took the picture. I held my hand out for the camera, and he gave it to me without argument. I turned it around and looked at the multitude of dials and buttons. I'm used to the IPH cameras. I looked up at him. You know, idiot, push here. He took it and set the focus on automatic, then handed it back to me.
There, just push the big button on the top.
I raised the expensive device and looked through the viewer.
Thanks.
The background of Painted Warrior made for an interesting effect, with one native face mirroring the other. I watched with my one eye as the autofocus first defined the features of the Cheyenne Nation and then the sandstone cliffs behind him, searching for whatever my wandering hand chose to photograph. He repeated patiently through his close-lipped smile, the large button on the top. Okay. I readjusted my aim, but the automatic function on the camera continued to focus on the cliffs just over the bear's shoulder, almost as if the Painted Warrior was demanding a photograph of itself.
Damn.
It was right as I went ahead and pushed the button that I could see something scrambling at the top, above the giant Indian's forehead, and then plummet from the face. I yanked the camera down just as a high-pitched wail carried through the canyon walls, and someone fell in an awkward position, almost as if holding something, and returned quickly and rewatched, helpless. The body struck a cornice once on the way down, then splayed from the side of the cliff, and landed at the bottom where the grass-covered slope rose to meet the rocks. The liquid thump of the body striking the ground was horrific, and we continued to watch as whoever it was rolled down the hillside with a cascading jumble of scree and tumbling rock. We were both running, the Cheyenne Nation ahead of me and moving at an astounding pace. Dog followed as we thundered down the hillside between the rock walls and back up the other side. It was so surreal that I couldn't believe it had actually happened, but the adrenaline dumping high octane into my bloodstream and the bear's reaction told me that it must have been true. By the time I got to the last hill leading to the base of the cliffs, I could see Henry looking from side to side, trying to see where the person that had fallen might be. There was a copse of juniper to the left, and I watched as he started and then ran toward it. I was there in an instant, and what I saw was like some surrealistic painting. I felt as if the world had been pulled out from under me, too. Her right leg was contorted to the extreme, with her foot up above her shoulder, and there were deep lacerations on one side of her body. The eyes were unfocused as she stared at the rocks above, and her head lunged involuntarily, the brain attempting to send signals through the broken spine. Henry kneeled beside her and cupped the side of her head in his hands, attempting to provide some kind of support without adjusting her.
"Do not move."
A breath escaped her lips as a fresh flow of tears drained down her cheeks. She gulped air into her bleeding mouth three times, then turned her head toward the bear's hand and died. I kneeled beside him and looked at her, reached a hand up to her throat, and placed my fingers where her pulse had been.
"Do you know her?"
He lowered her head and brushed back his hair with bloody fingers, the smears trailing from the corner of his eye to the clamped jaw like macabre kabuki makeup.
"No."
Dog began barking behind us, and I yelled at him, "Shut up!" Henry and I must have had the same thought at precisely the same time, because we both looked up simultaneously. From this angle, we couldn't see anything at the top of the cliff, only a few pebbles that rained down on us that must have become dislodged during her fall. I went ahead and yelled, "Hey, is there anybody up there?" My voice echoed off the rocks above and below, along with Dog's incessant barking.
"Shut up!"
I threw my head back and yelled louder this time, "Hey, is there anybody up there?" I took a deep breath and shouted again, "We've got a woman who's fallen!" Nothing, just Dog's continued barking. I turned and saw him standing down the hillside. I said, "Shut up!" The big beast's head rose and cocked in a quizzical cant. After a moment, the huge muzzle dipped and nosed at something, and it was only when he gently pawed at the blanketed bundle in front of him in the high stalks of buffalo grass that I finally saw the tiny hand and heard a baby cry. Chapter 2. It was a boy. I kept dipping my little finger into the water bottle so that he could drink the drops. I wasn't much of an expert, but I estimated his age at about 6 months. He'd stopped crying, and amazingly enough, seemed to have survived the fall with not much visible damage. He'd had help. In a perversity of timing and luck, we'd once again blown through the intersection of BIA 4 and State Route 212 in Lame Deer just as the rear end of a black Yukon headed east. When we got to the Indian Health Services building on the north end of town, Henry slid Res Dog into the parking lot with a ferocity of which I hadn't thought the vehicle capable. Under the canopy of the entrance, I handed the child off to the Cheyenne Nation, pretty sure that he was more adept at negotiating the bureaucracy of federal health care than I. I watched as he held the child close to his chest and rushed into the 11-year-old building with the alacrity of the All-American running back he'd been at Cal in the 60s, before Vietnam had changed his life and him. There was a story about Henry's first days at Berkeley. It seemed that four California boys from Stockton had taken it upon themselves to give Geronimo a haircut during the two-a-day practices, but after three broken fingers, a broken nose, a dislocated shoulder, and a concussion, they decided to go seek entertainment elsewhere. Dog followed Henry inside at a clip, unwilling to leave the child's side, only fair since he'd been the one to find him. I circled around the truck and climbed in to move it away from the emergency entrance, but my smile faded as the truck's engine stumbled and died as soon as I closed the driver's door behind me. "Oh, you!" I ground the starter and pulled the choke out just the tiniest bit, but the cantankerous V8 only grumbled and ignored my efforts. Figuring I'd just shove the piece of crap out of the way, I slipped the truck into neutral and threw open the door to start pushing. When I brought my face up, there was a black Yukon nudged right against the back bumper and, more important, a very irate tribal police chief, Lolo Long, staring me in the chin. "Hands on the vehicle."
"Look."
I didn't get any more out, because when I started to continue speaking, she shoved my shoulder and trapped my right hand in a reverse wrist lock that threw me against the scaly side of Res Dog's bed. It was a good move and expertly executed, but I was a lot heavier and turned just a little to let her know I still could. "Officer, if you'll just listen..." She put a lot more pressure in the wrist lock, and the position of my arm forced me back toward the truck. My immediate response would have been to back pivot and deliver a roundhouse elbow into the side of her head, but I was hoping we weren't at that point just yet. "We've got an emergency." She frisked me with her free hand under my arms and down my back.
"Stop talking."
I could feel the weight of Resdog shift beneath me as the front tires edged toward the slight drop-off where the emergency area had been repaved. "We've got a child in there who might be hurt, and a dead woman at the base of Painted Warrior Cliff."
"I said shut up." Her hand froze at the middle of my back. "What's this?"
I sighed. "It's my duty sidearm, a Colt 1911, both cocked and locked, and I'd appreciate it if you'd handle it with a little care." She fumbled with my canvas jacket, unsnapped the pancake holster, and yanked the semi-automatic from the small of my back, still holding me against the ever-so-slightly moving truck. "You know that carrying a concealed weapon onto semi-autonomous federal lands or reservations is illegal unless you happen to be of tribal descent, and you just don't look like Chief cleans his bore regularly." She spun me around and stuffed my Colt in the back of her jeans, then pulled her S&W.
"You're under arrest."
"Oh, come on." She leveled the .44 at my chest and tossed me her cuffs.
"Put those on."
I could feel the truck behind me as it picked up just a little bit of momentum, rolling off the asphalt patchwork and starting toward the great wide parking lot. I snapped one of the cuffs on a wrist and turned to watch Resdog gain a little speed. Lolo Long's eyes now looking past me at the unpiloted three-quarter ton as it continued to slip away. Her face now took on a little panic.
You need to stop that vehicle."
"Sorry, I've been arrested." She kept the Magnum on me but started moving past, undecided as to whether her responsibilities lay with her prisoner or the unbridled truck.
"I said stop that vehicle."
I shrugged and held up my cuffed hand, the other end of the cuff rattling against my forearm. "Nothing I can do." Resdog was now in a full advance toward the car-filled parking lot, and Officer Long suddenly made the lunge to catch it, racing across the distance at an impressive speed, a heck of a lot faster than I would have been able to accomplish. She holstered her weapon and grabbed the door handle, but as I would have anticipated, the latch didn't appear to work. She punched at the button and yanked mightily at the handle, even placed a boot against the bed and pulled as she hopped on one foot, pogo style, all to no avail. I leaned to the side and tried to judge the trajectory as the ugliest truck on the high plains took one of the loveliest, if irritating, law enforcement officers for a ride. It looked to me as if the point of impact was going to be a maroon 86 Cadillac parked at the end of the row. Never a fan of spectacle, I turned and walked through the automatic sliding glass doors with one last glance at Lolo Long as she scrambled through the open window of the rolling Resdog. Henry was standing at the reception desk, talking urgently to a very large woman, but he raised his face at the sound of my boots on the tile floor.
"Trouble finding a place to park?"
"No, no trouble at all." I glanced around. "Where's Dog?" The Cheyenne Nation smiled.
"In the examination room. We tried to hold him back, but he gave every indication that he was going to eat all of us alive if we separated him from that child."
I nodded, leaned against the counter, and looked at the heavy-set native woman, a little younger than Henry and I.
"Hello."
I extended a hand, suddenly remembering that it had a handcuff dangling from it. I decided to play it like being cuffed was nothing new for me.
"Walt Longmire."
She looked a little uncertain.
"The sheriff from Absaroka County?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Hazel Long." "Good to meet you, Hazel." I paused. "Are you related to Chief Long?" She glanced at the cuffs again.
"Lois, my daughter, yes."
I glanced at Henry as he stared at my hand.
"What?"
He closed his eyes and cleared the expression from his face.
"We need to contact the authorities."
"Oddly enough, they've been contacted." I threaded the office keychain from my jacket pocket and used the ever-present universal cuff key that dangled from the ring to extricate myself, allowing the hardware to fall onto the counter.
"Or rather, they've contacted us."
He looked past me and down the hallway, and I could just about bet what was coming.
"I believe she's about to make contact again."
Long grabbed my shoulder and yanked at me, half pulling me around to face her. She was sweating, and I was momentarily entranced by the beads of perspiration at the base of her throat. "You are still under arrest." Her face was now about 6 inches from my own. "And you're going to pay for the damages to the cars in the parking lot."
Cars, plural. I guess Resdog had gotten more than one. Good for her.
I was and still am under arrest and therefore not responsible for the vehicle in question. She straightened, a little surprised.
I'm pretty knowledgeable about vehicular codes, along with concealed carry laws within federal jurisdiction.
Lo? It took a second for her to disengage from her primary target, but when she realized that it was her mother speaking to her, she locked on her.
Excuse me?
The large woman started to stand. Lo, there's been an... She snapped back in the way that only family can. Is this official business? Because I am engaged in arresting this man, and unless you have something pertinent to say concerning... Lola Louise Long, stop acting like an ass. There's been an accident. A child is hurt, and a dead woman, who is going to be a major part of your official business, is lying at the base of Painted Warrior Cliff. She took a deep breath and shot air from her nostrils like a bull. And by the way, may I introduce you to Sheriff Walt Longmire of Absaroka County, Wyoming. You're still under arrest.
Okay.
I braced a hand against the dash as we swerved down BIA 4 at about 100 miles an hour. Can I have my gun back?
No.
I glanced past the elongated hood of the Yukon as we passed another unsuspecting motorist. You might want to turn on your siren.
She said nothing and continued slicing the wheel.
Seriously, if you...
She fairly screamed it. I don't know where the switch is.
I gave her my best double take, but fortunately her attention stayed on the road. Reaching across to the upper center console, I flipped down a small door and pulled a switch, flooding the surrounding area with the blooping noise of the high-tech siren. She flashed the amber eyes at me.
Thanks.
I nodded, and thought about how I was getting myself involved with a federal investigation on reservation land. I thought about asking Henry to go with her, but came to the conclusion that I was probably a little less of an adversary. The bear looked just as happy to stay at the hospital with the child, dog, and no Lolo Long.
Are you new to this?
What?
Law enforcement? I assume that this isn't what you did over in Iraq.
Huh? The response was more than a little defensive.
No, it wasn't.
What did you do over there?
None of your business.
She glanced at me, a sliver of jasper at the corner of one eye.
You serve?
I did.
Union or Confederate?
More and more like Vic. I went ahead and smiled. It was funny. See, up until now, you've kept that rapier wit sheathed. The radio interrupted with a call from the Montana Highway Patrol, informing us that the FBI investigator would meet us unseen and would be bringing a team along with him. Standard procedure on the res. Officer Long plucked the mic from the dash and rogered the call. She hung it back up.
I know of you.
She glanced at me again. You were involved with the Melissa Littlebird rape case a few years ago. I pulled the shoulder belt away from me with my thumb, my chest suddenly feeling a little tight. Yep, I was.
That was a cluster.
My chest got even tighter.
Yep.
She started to drive more steadily, braking before and accelerating into the curves, although our speed was still way over the limit. There were a lot of rumors swirling around when those boys started showing up dead.
Uh-huh.
One theory was that it was that buddy of yours, Standing Bear.
I didn't say anything.
Another was that you were the one doing it.
I still didn't say anything.
You caught somebody, didn't you?
It took a moment, but I found words in my mouth.
We stopped the shootings, if that's what you mean.
She rocketed past a windmill on the side of the road. You're going to want to take a left at the next dirt road. She dutifully slowed the SUV and made the turn at a reasonable speed, but accelerated again still bouncing us against the seat belts. I indicated the spotter road, and she took it as I reached across and turned the dial, putting the GMC in four-wheel drive, her glance letting me know I'd overstepped my boundaries.
"I'll operate the vehicle from here on out, if you don't mind."
We got to the ridge and parked, and pulling a crime scene pack from behind her seat, she followed me as I retraced the path to the base of the cliffs. Our approach spooked a coyote, and we could hear the buzzing of the flies before we got there. Chief Long was to my right as we got closer to the small stand of juniper trees, and I could see that the young woman's naked leg was still sticking up at an odd angle beside her face. I turned to look at Officer Long, but she had stopped, and staring at the dead woman was simply standing in the grass. I waited a moment and then took a step back, blocking her view.
"You know her?"
She looked surprised and then nodded in a distracted way, a traumatized look I'd seen before.
"Yeah. Yeah, I do."
"Give me the case." She blinked once and then looked up at me.
"No, I... No."
"Give me the case and go sit by the creek. If I need you, I'll call." She didn't move, even after I took the pack from her loose hand. "Go." She stood there for a bit longer and then turned and walked down the hill. I moved back to the dead woman and set the case down without actually looking at her. There was a charade I played with myself in these situations, a falsehood that allowed me to do the job, telling myself that it was only an exercise. This woman was not dead to me, not yet. That part would start soon enough. The ferocious desire to find out who she was, why this happened, and, if it was a factor, who did it. Was it an accident, a suicide, or a homicide? I put away my sunglasses and raised my face, getting a clear look at the cliff and watching the clouds race over in bleached streaks, leftovers from the storm that had hovered near Lame Deer. There was another crime scene up there where the majority of the questions would probably be answered, but that could wait. I judged the distance and did a quick calculation of the physics, which were not unlike the deceleration and impact forces found in automobile accidents in which the occupants neglect to wear seatbelts. In the 10th to 12th second of free fall, terminal velocity is obtained, terminal velocity being 110 miles an hour. She wouldn't have made that, but she'd gone fast enough. There would be fractured bones and lacerated damage to internal organs, as well as to the head and spine. She had told me that in those last few seconds. I only wish she could have told me more. I felt the falsehood of ritual flow over me, insulating me from the lingering results of death, humanity's ultimate adversary. I unzipped the crime scene case and was immediately faced with another adversary, a camera. All these years, and I still hadn't mastered the art of anything except the IPH model. This reminded me that we had left Henry's camera on the ridge near where we had parked the Yukon, and I made the mental note to pick it up on the way back to the vehicle. The camera from the kit was large-bodied, like Henry's, but of a simpler design, which I appreciated. I switched it on and began the photographic procedure of shooting the entire scene. The relationship area, distance of fall, and the point where she had struck the cornice. When I began photographing her, I noticed that there were bruises on her face and arms, some of them older than those caused by her fall. There were also scratches on the backs of her arms that looked like they might have been inflicted by someone grabbing her with great force maybe a week ago. The devil must be beating his wife. I continued photographing. The fingernails on her left hand were bloody and bent back, some even missing. Other than the indications of abuse, she appeared to have been a normal, healthy young woman. I noticed that there was even a small purse still trapped under her arm as I covered her with the plastic sheet from the case. I was tempted to move her and go through the purse, but I assumed the Montana authorities would just as soon do it themselves, making sure to use special care not to disturb any trace evidence. It seemed odd that she had decided to walk the air with her child. I thought that at that horrible moment when I'd seen her fall, her only concern had been something in her arms. I finished up and put the camera away. My work would be preliminary in comparison to the crime lab that would soon be here from either Hardin or Billings. Besides, I had other resources. I walked down the hill to the creek and found Chief Long tossing small pebbles into a pool a little downstream. A small brown trout had risen from the depths but then disappeared under my shadow. "How you doing, Troop?" She turned, sheltering her eyes with a hand, and looked at me.
"What did you just call me?"
I crouched down beside her and watched the lazy water coat the rocks so that she wouldn't be self-conscious about her red-ringed and still damp eyes. "Troop. It's a term my old boss used to use on me when I was starting out. I use it with my deputies."
"Well, don't use it with me."
She took a breath and tossed another pebble. This time the fish ignored it. "We're pretty much done down here." She looked at a simple Luminox wristwatch, the kind that Spec Ops used.
"What the hell is taking them so long?"
I raised my eyes and looked at what now seemed desolate surroundings. As unlikely as it was that Katie would have gone for this site before, it was surely